This week we again have the pleasure of reading two weekly parshas at the same time. So Tuesday we learned about the first parasha, Behar, and now we're going to learn about the second portion that is called Bechukotai. And this is a very interesting portion that a lot of people actually don't like this parasha, because it's talking about a lot of punishments. Bechukotai. Bechukotai. This week we're reading both Behar and Bechukotai. But Tuesday we learned about Behar. Today we're going to learn about Bechukotai. And a lot of people don't like this parasha so much because it's talking about a lot of curses and punishments. And this is called the parasha of Sachar and Onesh, the reward and punishment. And a lot of people, when it comes to punishments or negative things, hurts their ear. How come there's a punishment? But more than that, it's talking about the reward that I will get in this world for doing a mitzvah. If you do like this, you'll get like that, which is very nice. I'm very happy to get a reward. But it's skipping a very interesting detail, which, you know, makes everybody interested. It's skipping about the detail, what will be my reward in the world to come? And the Torah is going out of its way to disregard and to ignore the world above, after when I die. Now, this is a big question, because a lot of people, you'll come and tell them, you know, there's life after death, so to say, and there's an afterlife, and there's a heaven, there's hell, and there's all sorts of things going on. A lot of people say, where you come up with this idea? It doesn't sound like a Jewish idea. Where do you see in the Torah that it's talking about a spiritual world? Where does it say in the Torah that there's a Gan Eden? It doesn't have the word Gan Eden in the Torah. I mean, it has it in the book of Bereshit, but it's talking about Gan Eden here. Where does it say in the Torah about the world above or the world to come? It doesn't say the word Olam Haba. It doesn't say anything. So the question is why the Torah chooses to ignore or to completely hide the fact that there's a world to come. And in this parasha, it's talking about if you do these positive actions, you'll get a positive reaction. You're going to get a reward. And if chas v'shalom you do something negative, then you'll get a negative reaction. But we want to know, at least in this parasha, what's interesting to me is why the Torah is choosing to ignore Olam Haba. It's why the Torah is choosing not to tell me that there's a world to come and there's a spiritual reward. Because a lot of people say, listen, you know, I'm actually investing here for the world to come. So, more than that, there's a big question is why the Torah is being so obvious about the reward and the punishment. I mean, our sages tell us we have to do a mitzvah for the sake of the mitzvah, not for the sake of the reward. And I should not do a certain action, not because I'm afraid of a punishment, rather because I want to listen to Hashem. So why is the Torah really explaining all this reward and punishment? So for this question, the Midrash gives a very interesting answer. And it says that if you're noticing in the parasha of the rewards, it's starting with the letter Aleph, Im bechukotai tilechu, if you will go in my laws. And it's ending in the letter Taf, as it says, Va'olech etchem kumemuyot. So it's starting with an Aleph and it ends with a Taf, meaning it has all the letters in between and it's not limited. So the parasha of the klalot, of the curses, it starts with the letter Vav, Ve'im lo tishmeu, and if you will not hear, and it ends with the letter Hey. It ends with the word Biyad Moshe. So it starts with a Vav, but it ends with a Hey, meaning that it's going backwards. So the Midrash teaches from that that when it comes to blessing you can get more and more and more, like all the letters. You want to have the first letter, the second letter, the third letter. When it comes to curses, whatever the Torah says, that's what it is. There's no more. That's why it goes backwards. It starts with a vav and goes back to a hey. So the good news is that when it comes to blessing, there's no limit. It can go more and more and more. When it comes to chas v'shalom, something negative, then there's a limit, and Hashem says, these are just the curses. Or chas v'shalom, that punishes. Now, it also arouses a question, because it talks about a little bit of reward and a lot of curses. There's only 11 verses that are talking about the rewards, and there's only 29 verses that it's talking about the curses, which is almost three times as much. So again, one might look from that, why is there so much information about the curses and not information about the blessings? Which we'll get to that at the end of the class. But mainly today we want to concentrate on the fact as A, where do we learn in the Torah that there's a world to come, that there's a spiritual world, and after we die we go to a better place, at least we hope so. Where does the Torah teach this? Where does it come from in Judaism? And more than that, why does the Torah choose to totally ignore it and not to mention anything about it in the Torah? Now there's a book, it's called Sefer HaKuzari. This was written by Rabbi Yehuda Levi a few hundred years ago. And the book, the story says that he sat with the king of Kuzar. And the king of Kuzar would ask Rabbi Yehuda Levi questions, and he would answer them, and he put them in the book. And in this book you will find that the Kuzari comes and he says to Rabbi Yehuda Levi, how come other religions, they talk about the world above, the Olam Haba, and your religion doesn't? I mean, Christianity is only talking about the world to come. Same thing with Islam. They're talking about a lot, the spiritual world, the world to come. And the Kuzari says, how come your religion doesn't talk at all about this world, about the world to come? Where do you learn even that there's a world to come? What's called Olam Haba. So, where really do we learn about it? Because the Torah really doesn't talk. It's talking maybe in hints, but it doesn't really talk about anything solid telling us there is a Olam Haba. The first time we find information about Olam Haba is in the book of Prophets, and that's in the book of Shmuel. And there's a story there that Shaul went out to a war with the Plishtim, and unfortunately they were losing the war, and there was a lot of casualties, and it seemed like they're about to lose the war. So it says that Shaul went to a place called Ein Dor, and he went to a fortune teller, and he wanted her to do a seance and to bring the soul of Shmuel Anavi so he can ask him a question. Because while he was alive, Shmuel was his mentor. Shmuel the prophet used to answer Shaul's questions. He was an advisor. Now in this war, Shmuel already passed from the world. So he didn't know what to do. It seemed like they're about to lose the war. So he goes to this fortune teller. Or it's not really a fortune teller. It's I don't know the word in English. In Hebrew it's called Ma'alat Ov. She used to do a seance, like a witch sitting in a dark room. So she called the soul of Shmuel Anavi, and she did a seance, and Shmuel told her, tell Shaul that tomorrow he's going to die. Well, that's not a good news. So Shaul got very upset. What? That's the news you're getting? So he wanted to see if she's talking truth, so how can he believe her? So he asked her, how do I know you really spoke with Shmuel? How does he look? So she says he's wearing a coat made out of a certain cloth. And that's how he recognized that he knew that she's talking truth, because it was known that Shmuel was not buried with the tachrichim. You know, when we bury, we take little pieces of fabric and we sew them together. It's called tachrichim, and that's how we cover the body. Shmuel was buried in a coat from these fabric. He wasn't buried in tachrichim. And this fortune teller, she saw Shmuel with the coat, and she told Shaul that he's wearing me'il bad. That's the word that it's using. A coat made out of fabric, and he recognized it. And of course, the next day, Shaul Bemet died. He committed suicide. I mean, he put the sword the other way around, and he told one of the boys there to push him. And he died the next day. So you can go to the chapter there in Shmuel and read more about it. But this is the first time that we're getting a solid hint that there's a spiritual world and that there's a life after death. Because she brought Shmuel from the dead. She did the seance. And she brought the soul from the world above. So this is the first time that the Tanakh is mentioning something about the world above. The next time is also in the book of Shmuel, and there's a story with a certain individual, and his name was Naval HaKarmeli. Naval HaKarmeli was a very, very wealthy man. And at the time, David HaMelech, King David was not a king yet, and he was considered an outcast. He was considered a felon because Shaul was going after him. Shaul knew that he's about to get the chair. Shaul wanted to kill him. Constantly was going after him. So David HaMelech had to hide out. And in order to run his operation, he recruited a bunch of boys to be his gang, so to say. And they needed to eat. So they used to go to this Naval HaKarmeli and ask him for food. He was rich. And the story says that he didn't want to give them food. So they went into his... David HaMelech was a little bit shovav. And he says, okay, no problem. You don't want to give us food? I'll show you. And he took all his boys, like a gang, and they went into his fields and they started making problems, causing problems, destroying things, vandalizing, doing all sorts of damages. And he got very upset. Now, this Naval HaKarmeli had a wife who was actually a pretty righteous woman. And her name was Avigail. She came to David HaMelech and she told him a certain verse. V'hayta nefesh Adoni tzura b'tzror ha'chaim, that your soul should be, when it goes to the world above, will live forever. This is why we say when somebody died, tiyeh nefesh, and we say the name of the person, tzura b'tzror ha'chaim, you see it on all the tombstones, and you go to a cemetery, it has an acronym, taf tzadik nun hei, this is tiyeh nefesh tzura b'tzror ha'chaim. This is where it comes from, that his soul, excuse me, it means that the soul should be, so to say, imprinted or placed or so to say, sold in the tree of life, in the world above. So she says about David HaMelech, she had marital problems with her husband, so she was happy that David HaMelech was causing problems. So she told him, your soul should be a sign for the world above forever and ever, and the soul of my husband should be hung in Kafakela. She didn't like him at all, obviously. They had some bite issues. Maybe he took her out of the will. But this is the first time, actually, in the Tanakh that she mentioned the world above, the spiritual world. More than that, that's the first time we find in the Tanakh the word Kafakela. Kafakela, we know that is a very severe punishment that a soul can go through. And it's talking about it a lot in the Talmud. And it's mentioned even a lot in the book of Tanya, by the Balatanya, the concept of Kafakela. Kafakela is a slingshot. But this is the first time it's mentioned in the Tanakh. in this story. So again, we find another story in the Tanakh that it's talking about the spiritual world and the world above. Now, the next time we find anything about the world above is in the book of Kohelet by King Solomon. And it says a verse, a very interesting verse. It says, "Vayashuv ha'afar el ha'aretz kesheha," that the person will go back to the earth, to the ashes of the land, like where he came from. "Veharuach tashuv el ha'elokim asher nitana," and the spirit will go back to God from where it came from, the God that gave it. So this is really the first time, this is also in the Ketuvim, in Tanakh, that the wisest man, King Solomon, literally says that the body is worthless, it's going to rot and go back to its where it came from, and the spirit, the Ruach, is going to go back to God. So he's saying there in a very clear an obvious way that there is a world above that the soul goes to when it leaves the world. So we see three very clear details in the Tanakh talking about the world above. Then of course in the Talmud, in the Oral Torah, we find many stories that it's talking about the spiritual world. One of them, which is the most famous one, is if you remember the story with Rabbi Akiva, that Rabbi Akiva, He was part of the war of the what's called Mered Bar Kochva. Mered is Mered is the when they went against the government. Excuse me? Revolution, yeah, let's say revolution. So at the time there was a certain individual, his name was Bar Kochva. Bar Kochva. At the time, they had a mistake. They even thought that he's Mashiach. But there was a revolution against Adrianus. Adrianus was the ruler at the time. And Rabbi Akiva, that was already after the destruction of the temple. And Rabbi Akiva was participating in the revolution, in the Mered. And the decree was made by Adrianus that you're not allowed to learn Torah. And Rabbi Akiva didn't listen, and he didn't care. He continued teaching and learning Torah like as if nothing happened. So the result was that one day they came, and they combed his flesh 300 times with a steel comb made out of steel, and they literally murdered him, and that was on his birthday. He was exactly 120 years old, and there are four people that we know that reached the age of 140. 120, sorry. And he was one of them. And they murdered him with 300 combs, 300 times combing his flesh with metal combs. And as he was being murdered, his students were screaming out to him, like, "What, this is the reward you get for the Torah? You are our Rebbe, you are the giant in the Torah, and that's how you're leaving this world?" They couldn't understand. At the same time, the angels were standing above and looking down and screaming in the heavens to Hashem, "Ze Torah veze schara," this is the reward for the Torah? The person dedicated his life to become a Torah scholar, 24 years he was not with his wife, he gave his heart and soul and mind to the nation to teach the Torah, and he lived to 120, and this is how he ends his life? In such a horrible death? So Hashem answered the angels, and he said, "Tzadikim chelkam b'chaim." The righteous people, their portion is in life. But you just murdered him. What do you mean in life? So the answer was, the life is up there, not here. The real life is the world above this world. Meaning the real reward of the Torah is in the world above, not in this world. So, this is one of the most famous stories in the Talmud, basically saying out in the open, the real life is the spiritual life, it's in the world above. And the reward you get from what you did in this world is not in this world. You get it in the world above. There's no reward in this world, so to say. Now there's another story in the Talmud that emphasizes the fact that there's a world above. And there's a very famous story with Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. Sorry. Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai was one of the pillars in the Oral Torah. And the story in the Talmud says that on the day that he died, he was sitting in his bed and he was crying. And all his students couldn't understand. They told him, Rabbi, why are you crying? I mean, you're such a tzaddik. And he tells them, I'm crying because I'm scared. And they're telling him, scared? He's like, yes, I'm about to meet my Creator. So they're telling him, you are scared? You are a perfect tzaddik. The Talmud says that he never even talked one time a sicha betela, a conversation that has nothing to do with Torah. One time in his life. And they're telling him, you are scared? You are like the most righteous. You are tzaddik gamur. What do you have to be scared of? So he said, if I would meet a king, flesh and blood king, I would be excited. If you would now go meet a president or a big king, you would get excited. So he says, so much more so, I'm going to meet the master of the universe. I am scared. Maybe there is something wrong. And he's basically saying there, in other words, I'm going to the spiritual world and there's a life after that. He's basically saying in a very obvious way that there's a spiritual world. He's not saying I'm about to be manured to the worms right now. He's basically saying I'm leaving this world and going to the spiritual world. Saying very clearly that there is a world above. There's a spiritual world. Now comes a very big question, because we know from many hints, I just told you two stories out of hundreds. We know from many stories that the reward that we get for our good deeds in this world is in the world above. But the Torah also says that you're going to get a reward in this world. Comes a big question. There's a story in the Talmud said by a certain rabbi called Rabbi Yaakov. And he was one time observing a story, and he's sitting in a nice forest. He's sitting leaning on a tree, eating his sandwich, and he sees a scene. And he sees a father and a son walking in the path. Suddenly this father looks up on the tree and he sees a nest. And he tells the son, son, climb on the tree and scare the bird away and do the mitzvah of shiluach haken, scaring the bird away and take the eggs. The son goes up on the tree, does the mitzvah. He comes to come down and the ladder moves and he falls down and dies. And he doesn't understand what just happened. He's like, these are the two mitzvahs that it says in the Torah, Leman yarichun yamecha, that if you do this mitzvah, you're going to gain long life. The mitzvah of honoring your parents and the mitzvah of shiluach haken, of scaring the bird away. The Torah says clearly, when it comes to honoring your parents, leman yarichun yamecha, that you will gain a long life from it. So this Rabbi Yaakov says, I don't believe it. I don't understand what happened here. The boy did two mitzvot that the Torah gives a promise that you'll gain a long life, and he dies? I don't understand it. So the answer was that the Leman yarichun yamecha, that you will gain good and long life, it's talking about the world above. It's not talking about in this world. When you honoring your parents, it doesn't mean you're going to live till 150. It means that in the world above, that your days in the world above, yarichun, you'll get a lot, and you're going to get good and long life in the world above, not in this world. So basically we see here two things. A, that the Torah is totally ignoring about the fact that there's a world above. The Torah, not the Tanakh. It's totally hiding it. There's nowhere that you can find in the Torah the word Olam Haba. More than that, it's talking about that the reward of what we do is in the world above, not in this world. Comes a certain commentary that is called the Kli Akav, and he brings seven explanations, seven terutzim, why the Torah is ignoring the fact that that there's a world above. Seven explanations. Why the Torah chooses to totally disregard Olam Haba. Now we're not going to go through all of them, I'm just going to mention two of them. One of them is explained by a certain commentary called Yosef Albo, and he explains that the Torah is not mentioning anything about a reward in the world above, because he says all the reward that the Torah is talking about is a reward for the public, not a personal reward. And if you're going in the parasha, it says, "V'im b'chukotai t'ilechu," if you're going to go in my rules, "V'natati gishmechem b'itam," I will give you the rain in its time. Once, rain was the most important thing. No rain, no crops. No crops, no food. Now nobody cares about the rain, but in the olden days, rain was the most important thing. But if you look at the word, it says, "Natati gishmechem." When it rains, everybody enjoys the rain. Not only me. It doesn't only rain on me. The entire city enjoys the rain. This is a very collective reward. It says it in a plural well, Gishmechem, all your rains. Meaning, he says, listen, the reward is not a personal reward. It's a very general. Means that I do a certain action, everybody enjoys it. It's not me, it's not my reward. The next thing that it says, that the Torah says, "V'natati shalom ba'aretz," I'm going to give peace in the land. If there's going to be peace in the land, everybody benefits from that. Not only me. It's not only that me, where I live, there's going to be peace and everybody else is not going to be in peace. The entire land is going to get peace. Then it says, "V'hishbateti chaya ra'ah," that I'm going to control the bad animals. Again, this is something that affects everybody. Meaning that the reward of our good actions goes to the public, it doesn't go to me. Therefore, the Torah is choosing not to mention anything about the world above, because that's a personal reward. It's not a general reward. Okay, this is the explanation. Sounds very, makes a lot of common sense, why the Torah will choose to ignore the reward in the world above. Comes Maimonides, and he gives a very solid foundation in our belief that this is basically used by most commentaries and most people go by, that there isn't a reward in the Torah for the world above, because the mitzvah should be done for the sake of heaven, not for the sake of the reward. Rambam says, the Torah doesn't come and says, if you'll do this, you'll get that, because then I'll do the mitzvah for the reward. And the foundation of our belief is that you have to do the mitzvah for the sake of the mitzvah, not for the sake of the reward. And if the Torah is going to come and start telling you what's my reward, I'll be like, ooh, if I put tefillin on, I'm going to get $1 million, let me put tefillin on. And I will be driven to do the mitzvah because of the reward. And the mitzvah should be done only for the sake of the mitzvah, for the sake of Hashem, and not for the sake of the reward. Therefore, Rambam comes and he says, that's where the Torah totally disqualifies the fact that there's a world to come, so I'm not going to have an incentive here. And if I'm going to have an incentive, then I lost the point of the mitzvah. He basically says something very, very simple, that this is what we learn from, that the Torah is the conditions for my job. If I get hired right now to a job, I come to the job interview, they tell me, this is your job. I agree. Now, in order for me to fulfill my condition, my job, they're giving me conditions. They're telling me, we're going to give you a car because you have to go to meetings. And we're going to give you a cell phone because you have to make calls. And we're going to give you a laptop. And we're going to give you an iPad. And we're going to give you all sorts of things. They have to give me conditions. I mean, they can't come and tell me, listen, we want you to drive for our company, but bring your own car. It's So almost any job opportunity you come to, they'll give you conditions. You come to do a certain job. Let's say you are you do cleaning. They have to give you a broom. They have to give you detergent. They have to give you the soap. You can't bring it from your home. Bring it from your home. So almost in any job that I go to, has to be conditions. Have to be tools to do the job. We learn from what the Rambam says that the Torah is these conditions for my job. It's not the reward, it's not my paycheck. It's the conditions. I have to fulfill my job, then I have to get conditions and I have to get tools. And the Torah and the mitzvahs is the tools, it's not the reward. So, where do we learn something interesting from that? So there is a story in the Talmud that kind of teaches us that the mitzvah that I do in this world, I will gain reward in this world. And this is where the parasha comes from, because the parasha chooses to ignore the reward in the world above. From the reason is that the Torah says, I don't want to tell you what's the reward. I don't want you to work in this world for reward. But then again, the Torah comes and tells me, if you do what I tell you, I will give you a reward. But here it's coming to a reward in this world, meaning that the sachar, the reward that I get from my work in this world, is in this world, not in the world above. It says, "Vim bechukotai telechu." If you go in my path, in my rules, natati gishmechem bitam, I will give you now the rain. The reward is here; it's not in the world above. Meaning that the Torah comes and says, "Listen, I'm totally ignoring the world above. Concentrate on this world. And if you do a mitzvah, you'll get a reward in this world, not in the world above." Maybe you will. We're not going to talk about it right now. So the Gemara comes and tells a very interesting story that we learn how one gets a reward in this world. Now the story says that there's a certain family in Yerushalayim. Their last name was Eli. Now, like in our generation, you have a Goldstein, you have a Feinstein, whatever it is. Their last name was Eli. And this family had a serious problem that all their kids died by the age of 18. That's some weird genetic disease that the kids will come to the age of 18 and die. And they didn't have sophisticated technology and medicine. They couldn't find out what's the disease, what's the problem, but they knew that there's a problem. And the kids never reached the age of 19. At the age of 18, everybody died. So they went at the time to the Rebbe of the generation, which was Yochanan ben Zakkai, and he told him, listen, your family is cursed because you are the grandchildren of the Kohen that was named the Eli, Kohen Gadol. It was a certain high priest that his name was Eli, and he had two kids. One of them, one of his name was Pinchas, and the other one was name was Chofi. And these two Kohanim, these two priests, were not behaving the right way they weren't behaving real nice in while they were doing the sacrifices, and they got cursed that all their kids will die. They really were not behaving nice next to the altar, and there was a curse that all their kids will die. And Yochanan ben Zakkai said, you are great-great-grandkids of this Kohen Gadol, therefore all your kids are dying. Now this family, at some point, had two kids that became very, very famous. One of them is called Abaye, and the other one is called Rava. And these are the two most dominating Amoraim sages from the Talmud. They conclude the Talmud. And these two sages end up actually living much more than 18. Why? Because they were very smart individuals. They knew they are offsprings of this Kohen Gadol Eli. They knew they're not going to reach the age of 19. But they were Torah scholars, and they made a deal with the Kadosh Baruch Hu. So Abaye came to Hashem and says, listen, I'm going to devote my Torah 100% to you. If you're going to let me live, I will learn Torah Lishma. The same way that Chana came and told Hashem, if you give me a child, I will take this child and I will sacrifice him for you, Shmuel. I will give him, he's going to be dedicated to you. Abaye said, listen, if you give me a longer life, I will devote my life to Torah, and my entire Torah is going to be dedicated to you. Sure enough, Abaye lived till the age of 40. He got 22 years bonus from his Torah learning. Rava was a little bit more smart. He did the same deal with the Kadosh Baruch Hu, just that he added, I'm also going to do Gemilut Chasadim. I'm going to devote my entire Torah to you, and I'm going to totally be immersed in charitable acts, in Gemilut Chasadim, and it's also going to be devoted to you. So he would learn all day long in a yeshiva, and at night he had all sorts of charitable organizations, soup kitchen, clothes, achnasat kala, whatever it is. So he lived till the age of 60. So he got a bonus of 42 years. So from this story in the Gemara, we learn how an act in this world, a mitzvah in this world, actually you get a reward in this world. Mamash, you get the reward in this world. It's not talking about the world above right now. It's talking about this world. Why? Because the mitzvah is the conditions for my job. Meaning that if I'm a very good employee, I'm an outstanding employee, you know what I'm going to get? I'm going to get a bonus. The employee of the month. I'm going to get a nicer office space. I'm going to get a nicer car. I'm going to get a vacation. Because the conditions that I get in my job is to do perform my job. Not for the paycheck that I get at the end of the month. The paycheck is the salary. But I need conditions. If I want to be a good worker, I need conditions. The Torah and the mitzvot is the conditions for my job in this world. The salary is not discussed here in this world. Now there's another story in the Talmud proving that the reward is in this world. There's a certain Tana, there's a certain sage, his name was Rav Huna. He was known to be a very great sage, and at the same time he was also known to be extremely wealthy. And he had vineries, he had wine, he used to do wine. And he had what's called a kerem, he had 400 kramim, 400 vines. Just imagine what it means to have 400 vines. He would be the mass producer of wine of the time. Anyways, it says that one time he had 400 barrels of wine that went sour overnight. So that's a big financial loss, you know what it means? To lose 400 barrels of wine. I mean, you buy a little bottle of wine, imagine 400 barrels of wine. Anyways, he didn't know why. Overnight, they all got sour. This is a huge financial loss. So, you know, everybody was kind of embarrassed to maybe suggest that he did something wrong. He only had one friend that told him, listen, you know, en chet belo avon, en nisurim belo avon. There's no hardship in this world if there's no sin. You must did a sin. You probably did some type of a sin that you're getting a punishment in this world. In this world. If you get the punishment in the world above, that's a whole different thing. But when you get a punishment in this world, there must be a sin. En isurim belo avon. There's no such a thing. The Torah tells you. So his friend was the only one who was telling him straight to the face, listen, do a check. Fashpesh b'maasecha. You have to check your acts. Maybe you did something wrong. And he found out that there's a certain worker in his vines that he didn't pay him 100%. He missed some of the payments. And he called the worker. They made an account. They made a cheshbon. And he paid him everything to the last cent. And they squared it out. The story says that there's two versions of the story. One version says that overnight they all became unsour. Another version said that he very quickly had a whole new crops that came, and he was able to make double the amount. That not only that he didn't have any loss, he made much more money, became even more wealthier. But we see here very obvious that the reward that you get for a good act, for a mitzvah, is in this world, not in the world above. The cheshbon, the summary, the salary, in the world above, that's not discussed. Because Hashem says, I don't want you to operate in this world based on a reward. I want you to operate in this world based on this world. Concentrate on this world. Why are you concentrating on the world above? So, we see that there's a very huge connection between the spiritual and the physical. And the Torah basically comes and tells me, if you're going to do good deeds in this world, you're going to get the reward in this world. I'm not talking about the world above right now. You're going to do charitable acts, you're going to learn Torah, you're going to follow the mitzvot, you're going to have a good life in this world. Don't concentrate now on the world above. That is obvious. The reason why the Torah is not talking about the world above, because it says that's obvious. I don't need to talk about it. If you do what I tell you in this world, so much more so, it's going to be good in the world above. The Torah wants to be very clear by saying, if you do what I tell you in this world you're going to have Gan Eden. I mean, in this world we want to have a good life. I want to have a nice home, I want to have money, I want to have a nice relationship with my wife, I want healthy kids, I want to be healthy, I want to enjoy the world, I want to travel, I want to see things, I want to enjoy this world. So the Torah tells me, do good in this world, you're going to get the good in this world. Meaning that if I'm not getting so much good in this world, meaning that I have to, like with this Tana Ravuna, I gotta check, maybe I'm doing something wrong. That I'm getting some bad things going on in this world. So, the Torah comes and tells me very, very simple that the reward that I gain from the Torah and the mitzvot is in this world. That Gan Eden, heaven, can be in this world. It's not in the world above. The world above is for the world above. We're not talking about it because mainly the Torah comes and tells me, I don't want you to have any agenda. I don't want you to do anything based on the fact that you're going to get something in the world above. When the Kozari was arguing with Rabbi Yehuda Halevi that saying other religions, they talk about the world above, the answer was, yeah, because for example, the terrorists, the Muslims, you know why they bomb themselves? Because they're promised something in the world above. They're willing to do something extreme in this world because their belief is that, oh, in the world above, I'm going to get 72 virgins. You know, the joke is that they don't get 72 virgins. They get one virgin that she's 72 years old. So, that's just a joke. But they're, maybe it's real, I don't know.
I heard a joke that said instead of 72 virgin, it's actually 72 Virginians.
Oh, boy. So the point is that they do an extreme act based on the fact that they're getting a reward in the world above. And in many other religions, they teach, do A, the reward in the world above will be such and such. And the Torah comes and says, no, I don't want you to say now, oh, I will observe Shabbat because in the world above I'm going to get a reward. Because that's what's going to happen. I'm going to sit like this the entire Shabbat thinking of my reward. And the Torah says, no, I want you to serve Hashem for the sake of serving Hashem, not for the sake of getting a check at the end of the month. So therefore the Torah chooses to totally ignore the reward of the world to come. Because the Torah says, I want you to concentrate on this world. I want you to do the mitzvah for the sake of the mitzvah, for serving Hashem. But if you do the mitzvah in this world, you will get a reward in this world. What's going to happen in the world above, don't worry about it right now. Don't worry. If you're going to get a reward, if the Torah comes and tells you, you're going to get a reward in this world for a mitzvah, so much more so you're going to get a reward in the world to come from a mitzvah. But the real way of doing the actual mitzvah or learning the Torah is for its sake, not to have an agenda. So to summarize it, the Torah comes and tells me, I'm giving you the Torah and mitzvahs to educate you, to give you a tool how to operate in this world. You buy now a machine, you buy a phone, you buy a TV, you buy whatever it is. It comes with a manual. So the manual tells you how to use it, how to benefit the most out of it. Same thing here. Hashem puts me in this world and He tells me, here's a manual. I want you to know how to use the world. here's the Torah. It's going to teach you what to do. You just follow the manual. There's nothing to do with the reward right now. Don't look for a reward. The Torah is just my work conditions in order for me to serve Hashem in this world. And yes, I need to look at it in a way that's saying, if I should already get a reward, it's for this world. And there's nothing wrong in saying, yes, you know what? I do want to have a nice relationship with my wife. I want to have health. I want to have money. There's nothing wrong with that. It doesn't say anywhere in the Torah that I have to suffer. It doesn't say anywhere in the Torah that I have to live in poverty, or that I should fight with my spouse, or that I should be spending my time in hospitals, chas v'shalom. Lehefech. It says, v'chai behem, you have to have a good life. Shem says, I'm not looking to torture you. If you see that when the world was created, Hashem says, I will put man in Gan Eden. It says the word Gan Eden. I want to put you in heaven in this world. Hashem didn't create this world to torture us. He created the world for us to have a heaven, a place to be. But there's rules. If you do good, you'll get good. You do bad, you'll get bad. It's very simple. One can look at it as a reward and a punishment. Like we mentioned several times, it's not a punishment, it's a reaction. It's very simple. You'll go now to a dietitian, and the dietitian will tell you, listen, if you eat all these good, healthy vegetables, you will be healthy. You're not going to have all sorts of pains. You're going to have energy. You're going to be alert. You're going to be alive. And if you eat all this junk, all these treats, you're going to be sick. You're going to have pains. You're going to gain weight and so forth. And you listen to the dietitian. In most cases, you listen. Why? Because, you know, I want to live healthy. So here the Torah comes and tells me, you want to have a good life? Listen to what I tell you. It's not a reward. It's the conditions for my work. And the Torah, to answer the major question, why the Torah chooses to ignore the world above, is mainly because the Torah says, I don't want you to concentrate on the world above. I want you to concentrate on this world. You know, when Mashiach is going to come, we're going to be here. We're not going to pack our bags and go to Olam Haba. The whole concept of creating of the world is to enjoy here, this world. In a later stage when Mashiach is going to come, there's going to be what's called Tchiyat HaMetim, the resurrection of the dead. And then we're going to get our reward in this world by having a soul in a body. So the body needs to get a reward for its mitzvahs, and the soul will get its reward. But the main reward is we're going to be like Adam and Chava. We're going to be in this world in the level of Adam and Chava, like they were in Gan Eden. So the real reward is still in this world. Hashem says, listen, I created the world for this purpose. So what we need to take from that is that the reason why the Torah is ignoring the entire concept of Olam Haba, it's ignoring the concept of rewards or punishment in Olam Haba, the Torah, not talking about the Tanakh, and not the Oral Torah, and not the Zohar, and not the Kabbalah, and anything else, the Torah. Because the Torah says this, that I don't want you to operate based on a reward. I do not want you to operate with an agenda or with an incentive. I want you to do the mitzvah for the sake of the mitzvah. And yes, you will get a reward in this world. That's why the parasha comes and says, "Ve'im bechukotai tilechu." If you're going to walk in my path, Gishmechem can be translated as rains, and Gishmechem can also be translated as the Gashmiut, the physicality. And you're going to get whatever you need in the physical world if you're going to go in my path. My path is the Torah. And if you're not, then there's going to be all sorts of, so to say, curses, like the Torah calls it, klalot, curses, punishments. This is basically the Constitution. If you read the Constitution, it says what you're allowed to do and what you're not allowed to do. And if you go to any normal country, there's a laws. If you murder, first degree, you're going to go to jail for a certain amount of time. If you're going to do second degree murder, you're going to go for X amount of time. If you're going to steal, if you're going to embezzle, if you're going to cheat, there's laws. Very simple. So the Torah also has laws and says, listen, if there wouldn't be laws, there wouldn't be chaos. Before we got the Torah, there was chaos. There was chaos at the generation of the flood. They did whatever they wanted. There was the chaos at Sodom. Till we got the Torah, there was basically chaos everywhere. There was no rules. People do whatever they wanted. So Hashem says, okay, I have to bring rules. You can take now any child and put the child in a deserted island without parents, he will grow wild. He will do whatever he wants. One can come and observe the education system of parents and say, you are mean. You are tyrants. You are putting the kid to sleep at 8 o'clock at night when he wants to stay up till 11. You are mean parents. And you're not giving him a bowl of lollipops right now. You are such mean parents. And you put the child against his will in the shower? How dare you? You know, you take any child now and put him in a bath, they'll start screaming. But you need to be clean, and the children will go wild. One can come and say, this is child, italilut, how do you say? Abuse! The child is screaming! How dare you give the child a shower? So one can come and observe parenthood and say, you are taking away the child's freedom. Some people say that. They come and say that you are abusing the child, you're taking its freedom. That's my child. If I'm not going to put boundaries, he's going to do whatever he wants. If I'm not going to punish him when he does something bad, he's going to grow to do something worse. He needs to understand that there's rules, that there's laws, that there's going to be a punishment if he's going to do something bad. I can't give him to do whatever he wants. I can't give him a bowl he can eat of lollipops. He can have one. There's nothing good if he has a whole bowl of them. So even when I try to educate my kid, there has to come rules. I can't give the child whatever he wants. So the Torah comes and tells me, listen, totally ignore the world above. Take it away from your reality. Don't do anything for the sake of the world above. That is doing something with an agenda. Or you're doing out of fear that you're going to be barbecued somewhere in Geinom, maybe if you do something wrong. That's wrong. That's the wrong attitude. Don't do the prohibition, not because you're afraid to be an obscure in hell. Because somebody told you, yesterday we met a young lady, she came and she was traumatized by the Orthodox world. Because she grew up more modern. She wanted to become more closer to God. And she moved to a very Orthodox community, and all they told her, you're going to be burnt in hell because you do this, you do that, you do this. She traumatized now because everything they told her, she's going to be burnt in hell. And now she's literally traumatized. And I told her, don't worry, you're not going to be burnt in hell. I don't know who told you that. Maybe the fire department. I don't know who told you such a thing. But the people are traumatized from that, and Hashem says, I don't want you to learn about the world above because I don't want you to be traumatized now and be afraid to do something because someone is going to come and threaten you that you're going to be now going to a certain place. This is not what the Torah is saying. That's why the Torah chooses to say, I'm not talking about the world above. It's none of your business. Your business is this world, not the world above. You want to learn a little bit about the world above. You want to learn Zohar. You want to learn Kabbalah. Now it's becoming very popular. People are having near-death experiences all day long. 100 years ago, who had a near-death experience? Now it's popular. People come and ask me, how do I have one? I mean, you had one. How can I have one? It seems pretty interesting. So the point is the Torah comes and tells me, listen, be simple. The Torah says, Tamim tiyem Hashem Elokecha. Don't start investigating too much what's going to happen in the world above. It's none of your business. That's why the Torah chooses deliberately to ignore everything that has to do with Olam Haba. Later on, it came in hints in the Tanakh. Later on in the Oral Torah, it came a little bit more obvious. Later on in the Zohar, it was even much more obvious. But the Torah itself comes and tells me, concentrate on this world. Concentrate on the good deeds in this world. Yes, you will get a reward in this world. You'll do something good in this world, you're going to get a reward in this world. You're going to do something bad in this world, there will be repercussions. You will get, so to say, a punishment in this world. Don't lie. Don't cheat. You're going to cheat in business, the money that you're going to make in the business is going to go to the dentist or going to go to the auto shop from the accident. So there's not going to be any blessing. You're going to work on Shabbat, you're not going to have any blessing in the money. The money is going to go to something bad. But you're going to give charity with your money, you're going to get a reward from that. There's a story in the Talmud, we'll tell you one story and that's it, about talking about, the story is talking about Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai, and he was once walking with his students in the street and they see a woman picking up the, you know, Rachel before said the word in a more obvious way, but she was picking the outing the droppings of an animal. I mean, there's other ways of saying it, but she was picking the droppings of the animal. They walked close. They couldn't stand the sight of this lady picking up the excrement. Yochanan ben Zakkai looked at her and he tells her, "Oh, I know this girl. You know who this girl is? She's the daughter of Nakdimon ben Gurion. She's the daughter of the Bill Gates of the generation." There were three very wealthy people at the time of the after the before and after the destruction of the temple. One of them, of course, was the father-in-law of Rabbi Akiva, Ben Kalba Savoa. But one of them was a certain individual, and his name was Nakdimon Ben Gurion. And he was extremely wealthy. It said that he was so wealthy that he was able to sustain the entire city of Jerusalem for 3 years. That's how much food he had. That's how wealthy he was. Anyways, this girl that was picking up the outings, the droppings of the animal, was his daughter. How come the princess, the daughter of Bill Gates, is now picking up the excrement of animals? So the students wondered, how did something like this happen? So Yochanan ben Zakkai said, because her father didn't give enough charity. Didn't give enough charity? You know how much charity he gave? So Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai says, yes, he gave charity, but not in the level what he was able to give. For him, for Bill Gates to give $50,000 charity, that's not charity. He needs to give $500 million in charity. Because he has billions, then the charity has to be in the same value. You have, you're worth $20 billion, you need to give at least $2 billion in charity. So to a billionaire that is worth $20 billion to give $50,000, that's not charity. It's like me giving 2 cents. So Yochanan ben Zakkai said, yeah, her father did give charity, but not in the level that he was supposed to give. He was supposed to give much more charity. Therefore, the punishment, so to say, that he lost his entire fortune. And now his daughter is picking up the droppings from the animals.
So where does the daughter get affected and not the boy himself?
That's a very good question. Why would the daughter get affected? Because there are many explanations. One of them is that the father is responsible for the children. And me as a father and you as a mother, you are responsible for the child. If I'm lazy and I don't want to get up to work, or I go and take my money and drink it, or snort it, or gamble it, my child will get affected. And it's not, you would say, why is the child getting affected? Obviously, it's the Ashgacha Pratit, it's a divine providence for the child to suffer. But it's the responsibility of the parents. When I go into the chuppah, I should go into the chuppah and to understand that I'm about to take responsibility now to my spouse. It's actually in the ketubah, it says that I have to take responsibility. I have to provide to my wife. That's what it says in the ketubah. I sign it. Then I have children. Before I have a child, I have to think, am I responsible enough to take care of this child? I have children now. I cannot do whatever I want. I can't just get up and leave. I can't just take my money now and go on a vacation and leave my children with a babysitter. I have responsibility to my kids. That's why when I have children, you have to be responsible. And if I do something, yeah, it will affect my kids. You know that if I now do something foolish and I will be arrested and go to jail, my kids will suffer from that. One might say, what is it the kids' fault? Obviously, that's the divine providence. What's called Ashgacha Pratit. But yes, it's my responsibility. But we learn from that my actions in this world will affect me, good or bad. I will do something good, like we see with Rav Huna. He fixed a damage that he did, that he didn't pay his worker. Not only that he got his barrels of wine back, he tripled them. And we see here with this rich person, Nakdimon, that he didn't give enough charity, he lost his fortune. So basically what we can take from that is that anything that happens in this world happens for a reason. And very possible that I did something to cause it. And when something bad happens to me, the Talmud tells me, first of all, tefashpesh b'masecha, go through your acts. You might have done something wrong. If I wake up in the morning now and I got a ticket, or my car got towed, or somebody smashed into my car and ran away, then I should right away say, wait a minute, maybe I did something. Let me backtrack now to see. Maybe I stole, maybe I did gezel, maybe I lied, maybe I cheated, maybe I did something. And if you're really honest, you might find really what you did. If you're not honest, you'll sweep things under the table and say, no, 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 that's fine. But if you're really honest, you'll be like, you know what, it wasn't right. I did raise my voice on that individual. It wasn't nice. I cursed my wife. I was mean to my parent, whatever it is. Or I cheated here and there. You have to be honest. If you're 100% honest, then you'll find out that you're not 100% right and you know how to do tshuva. That's why I don't like calling it punishments. I rather calling it a reaction and more like a sign. Hashem tells you, listen, you did something wrong. Here's a sign. Wake up. You did something. So it will come. We talked about it last week. First it comes a little bit. Hashem knocks very soft in the beginning. Then he knocks a little bit stronger. Then he knocks more. So Hashem sends you sign all the time. You can call it a punishment. I will call it a sign. Hashem tells you, you did something wrong. Wake up, do tshuva, apologize, give it back, and it will be reversed. So we want to take from that something very simple, something very noble. Serve Hashem for the sake of Hashem. Don't serve Hashem for the sake of what you're going to get a reward in the world to come. And hold yourself from doing negative things, not because chas v'shalom one day you'll find yourself on a skewer, what people say in Geinom. You're not going to find yourself on a skewer. Stop yourself from lying or cheating or cursing or doing something wrong because it's the right thing to do. Because you're going to hurt somebody else. Because that's the will of Hashem. And we're supposed to represent Hashem as human beings. And I have to be aware of what I'm doing, not because of the reward or the punishment, because it's the right thing to do. I should now give you charity, not because I'm expecting to make a business deal. I know people that they come to me and they tell me, here's $1,000 charity. Why are you giving me suddenly $1,000? Because I have a big business deal I wanted to close. Pray for me. Now you're deciding to give me charity? The whole year, what? Yeah, the whole year I'm telling you I need money for my yeshiva, I need money for the food, I need money for that. Now you have a business deal, suddenly you come with a check. So you're right, at least they're honest and they're saying I want my business deal to work out. But, you know, sometimes people all year round, they don't show their face in shul. They come on Rosh Hashanah, suddenly big amounts are being declared in the air. $1,000, $2,000. Why? Because their agenda is I need to get a blessing for the rest of the year. So they come and suddenly they're very generous in Rosh Hashanah. They raise the hand when it comes to the auctioning. They forget to pay it. But they come for the fact, for the blessing for the rest of the year. I was a gabbai in a big shul for many years. I can tell you that 90% of them don't pay. They raise their hand. It's very easy to say 100. But to pay the 100, to go like this is easy. To go like that, it's very hard to write the check. So, and that's a very severe thing, by the way. Because when you raise the hand in the shul, when they sell the opening of the ark or going up to an aliyah, and they sell it and you raise your hand and you say 100 or 200 or whatever it is, you made a nedel, you made a vow. And if you don't pay it, that's a severe sin, is to break a vow. And I always kept telling it in shuls, in many shuls that I go to, people raise their hand to volunteer for a certain amount. I always tell them, pay that Motzei Shabbat or Sunday, come and pay it, because you're going to forget and you have a severe sin of breaking a vow. So to take something out of today is I want to concentrate on this world. I don't want to concentrate on the world above. I want to do the mitzvot for the sake of the mitzvah, not for the sake of getting a reward in Gan Eden. I want to do good deeds in this world and prevent myself from doing bad things for the sake of Hashem, for the honor of Hashem. It says when I do a mitzvah, I'm making the honor of Hashem greater in the world above. That's what I have to think of. I'm not going to cheat right now or lie or steal, because I'm wearing a yarmulke and I have a long beard, and even if I don't wear a yarmulke and I have a long beard, people know who I am, and I'm going to do the desecration of the name of Hashem. And even if it's in a closed room, Hashem knows, Hashem sees. And the point is to be humble and to serve Hashem with a clear heart and not with an agenda to get a reward. Bezat Hashem, when we do everything with a clear heart and a pure heart, that's what's going to allow us to get the ultimate reward is to see the coming of Mashiach and to see it with our own eyes. And this is the ultimate reward, because the Torah comes and tells me, if we would observe twice the Shabbat, we would get Mashiach. That's what it says in the Torah. If we keep twice Shabbat, that actually we learn from that it's one Shabbat is enough, because it's talking about two levels in the Shabbat. But the sad news is that in the last 3,300 years, we didn't observe Shabbat, the entire nation, twice, because we would get redeemed already. The Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai says in the Zohar that it's not two Shabbatot. Mm-hmm. It's one Shabbat. Mm-hmm. There are two levels in Shabbat. Shabbat Ilah and Shabbat Tata. There are two levels in the Shabbat. So we don't need to do two weekends. We need one Shabbat that is observed 100%. The sad news is that in the last 3,300 years, we didn't, as a nation, not we, as a nation, we never observed the Shabbat fully, because if not, we would be redeemed. That's how sad it is. But the Torah comes and tells me, if you would keep Shabbat 100%, you would be redeemed. Meaning that if I will do the mitzvot with my pure heart and a clear heart with no intention, we will gain to see Mashiach very soon with our own eyes. Bezrat Hashem, should happen very soon.